Good evening. My name is Keith, and I'm an alcoholic. And glad to be here. Tonight we're on 8 and 9, so we're almost done. Yay. No, but seriously, I am almost glad it's over. Negative. Yeah, 8 and 9. We've been over the steps, and I had an incident Sunday night that I wish it would have happened. Well, I don't wish it would have happened, but it would have been better for it to happen on the first step because it deals with the allergy of the body. I was watching the Super Bowl Sunday, and we were at a friend's house, and I've been eating shrimp all my life, like no problem for 45 years, no problem with shrimp. And you know, I had a couple pieces of shrimp, and my right eye got red. And so Allie and her friend were like, man, what's wrong with you? So I started scratching my eye, and she gave me Visine, so I was good. So I came back out. I had some more shrimp and some more little pigs in a blanket, hot dogs or whatever. And all of a sudden, man, my body just started, I was on fire. Like, it was itching real bad. And I didn't know what was going on, right? So I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, my lip starts getting tingly. So I get up to walk outside. And as you walk outside this lady's house, she's got a mirror right there. And if you guys ever seen the movie Hitch, he ate something and his face just blew up and stuff. And that's what happened to me. My face blew up, so I go outside and I get in my car and I hit the light and I'm like, oh, I'm like, I'm doing it on myself basically. And so I get Allie, I got a text her. I'm like, man, we got to go, but I don't know how to get her. So she comes outside and I'm like, we got to go. She's like, what? What are you talking about? I'm like, babe, we got to get out of here. And she looked at me and I'm not going to tell you what she said, but she ran back in the house and got her purse and stuff, and she rushes me to the hospital. And we get to the emergency room, and this nurse comes out, and she's not understanding. She's like, does he look like this normally? And Allie's like, she's like, are you serious? Like, I was a hot mess. And so they put me in the back in the emergency room. And now, mind you, Super Bowl Sunday, so there's no room for me to go into a room. So they put me in the hallway, and they shoot me up with Benadryl, liquid Benadryl, and steroids or whatever. So I'm sitting on this gurney, and all night long, we're there for 4 hours, and I'm in and out of consciousness. And I keep hearing this guy screaming in the background, let me out of here. I just want to go. I want a beer. And I didn't know that that was happening. So the next morning, I asked Allie, was I dreaming that? She's like, no, that was really going on. And I was thinking, man, like, how blessed are we that, you know, we don't have to live that way anymore. Also, she goes outside to vape or whatever. And not that she was eavesdropping on this girl's conversation, but the girl's, like, in some hospital rub, and she just got there because of drugs and alcohol. She's on the phone. She's talking to whoever she's talking to. And she's saying to this person, I need to get back to the bar. I need to get back to the bar. And that was me. Like, I can relate to that. Like, that's how, where my drinking and drugging took me to. And so I'm blessed to be here tonight because that was the second time in the last 5 years I almost died. So I guess God had other plans for me. So I'm supposed to be talking about 8 and 9, and, you know, I'm not going to go into the first step. If you're sitting in this room, you pretty much have an idea that you have a problem. So I don't need to tell you that. You know, step 2, you know you can't fix it if you're sitting in this room, so there's God. So in step 3, we make that decision to turn our will, which is my thoughts and my life, which is my actions, over the care of God as I understood them. I made that decision in step 3, and I talked about it before. You know, it's more than me just doing the rest of the work. Of course, I'm going to do the rest of the work, but I need to understand that Keith sucks at running his life. Like, he's horrible at it. And so I made that decision. I do a 4-step inventory, and I find out who you got when I show up on the scene. By this time, I find out that there's more to my problems than just drinking and drugging. Right? That's just, the book tells me that's just a symptom. It just is. So I do my 4-step inventory, and in the presence of God, my sponsor, I tell him everything. And this man holds me accountable. And before I got here, man, I didn't know the severity of this disease. I don't know if you heard over the weekend, an Oscar winning actor, 46 years old, overdosed on heroin, right? Man had the world by the balls, had everything to live for, and died. I talked about it last week. Another girl, locally, was 27, had the world by the balls, died. Like, this isn't a game. And a couple weeks ago, from the podium, I want to say I disrespected the gentleman, but I guess his phone went off, and come to find out it was his mother. She was sick or whatever. But I, from the podium, called this guy out. And so if he's here tonight, or if you know that person, just tell him I was wrong for doing that. I get it. You know, we're new. James made that announcement before the meeting. You know, we're very selfish and self-centered when we get here. It's all about me. I come here. I'm 22. For you 22 years out there, and you're young. You're in rehab. You don't want to be here because that's what we do when we're 22. We drink. We party. That's normal. And now you're in a treatment center, and you're made to come to these stupid meetings and listen to a guy. You know, sorry. I didn't get you here. Obviously, somebody thought you had a problem. Needless to say, I get it, because I was once like you. I would come to the meetings when I first got here, and it was all about me, you know. Let me get my coffee. Let me get up and down with a big sign on my forehead. Look at me, look at me, look at me. I'm not going to die from this thing. I'm 22. This is what guys do. I'm a Marine. I can't die from this thing. But I asked you guys like 6 weeks ago, who here knows somebody that has died as a direct result of drugs and alcohol, and pretty much everybody's hand went up. So not to be morbid about anything, but this is a fatal illness. But I'm here to tell you the good news if you're new. There's a way out, right? It's outlined in this book. So if you're not in the book, or if your sponsor doesn't have you in the book, or if you're taking your time with the book, I feel sorry for you. Because left to my own devices, I'm going to drink again. I talked about 6 and 7 the last 2 weeks. Old Keith is going to drink again. You know, I get separated from booze and alcohol. Of course, life gets better. It just does. It naturally gets better. But what am I going to do with that internal condition? Because now I find out, like I said, I have more problems than just drinking and drugging. And in step 5, my sponsor, you know, he held me accountable. I find out that I'm a scumbag when I get here. Like, I can't stay sober on my own, right, given who I was. And 8 and 9 is all about amends. It's all about repairing relationships. It's not about saying I'm sorry. It's about repairing relationships. So here's what the book tells me my problem is. And James covered it. It's funny how you said selfish and self-centeredness. Selfishness, self-centered, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that sometime in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So we think our troubles are basically of our own making. See, before I got here, it was your fault that my life sucked. You know what I mean? I was a victim. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he doesn't think so. So think about that. Next time you're at a meeting, you're getting up and down, and, you know, it's all about you. Forget that newcomer. He might be the person coming in here for the first time or the 20th time, and this might be the time he says, I want to live. But you're so selfish that, forget him. I'm going to do what I'm going to do because I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Step 6 and 7 was all about, and in the big book, it's 2 short paragraphs. But Bill Wilson and them guys knew back in the day how important that stuff was. Because it's all about old self dying, right? I talked about, when you were here a couple weeks ago, you saw me do that little exercise with the water. You know, that was the sum total of me when I got here. A dark, cloudy glass of water. Character defects running amok. Right? And then step 7, I'm asking God to remove all that and make me the man that you wish me to be. So I'm getting ready to go make these amends. I'm going to tell you a couple stories about my amends because I think it's important. Like, I can sit up here and read the book to you, and I can sit up here and tell you the mechanics of it, but I'm going to show you how they played out in my life as far as these amends goes, because I think that's more valuable rather than me just sitting here talking to you. But with these amends, you know, it's important that when I go to make my amends that they get somebody totally different than they have ever gotten before, right? Because we've all said, I'm sorry. I've always said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And all that means is Keith is telling you I'm sorry because I'm setting you up to do it again. Don't know when I'm going to do it, but that's all I'm sorry is. So when we get to 8 and 9, the book talks about we made a list. That list comes from your 4-step inventory. So when you do your 4-step inventory, you don't burn it, you don't bury it out to sea, you don't bury it, none of that. That's your blueprint for the rest of the work. So the list is already done. And it's important that you have a sponsor, a good sponsor, because we could blow these amends. Like, a lot of us come in, I speak for myself. I came in, I wanted to tell the world I was sorry. Like, look, Mom, sober. Not really sober, I'm abstinent. But I want to come in, go to a couple meetings, get a white chip, and then declare I'm good, I'm sorry. It's not that way, right? I must take out the garbage. I must make sure that that old person is dead when I go make these amends. So my first amends that I made, you know, I'm sober 10 months. I'm at Solution Sober House. And it was time for me to go home because my parents hadn't seen me in 7 years. Talk about self-aware run riot, self-centeredness, all this. In my mind, I'm not hurting anybody but myself. That's what I told myself for a lot of years. And my mom hadn't seen me in 7 years. And the first call she hears about me is from a Jamaican lady that she doesn't know at 3 a.m, telling her to get on the next plane to come down to Florida if she wants to see her son alive again. Talk about that horror. That's a harm. I didn't think that was a harm. I'm thinking about a harm is something I stole from you, I beat you up, or whatever. No, I had deeper harms than that. So my mom comes down here, and we have a little kumbaya moment, and I wasn't sober yet, you know, I wasn't at Solutions, but I told her I was sorry, I'll never do it again, whatever. A week later, I was drunk and high and in a hotel room over on Northwest 31st Street. Well, this time, I'm 10 months sober, I've done the steps, and Joe puts me on a plane to go back home. And I had a game plan. Like, we had a game plan. I get home that morning, I call Joe, we pray that morning, I know exactly what I'm going to be making my amends to, and I get to it. So me and Mom get in the car, and we go around the city, and we get everybody gathered. We go back to my grandmother's house, and I get him in the living room, man, and I basically did a fist step with my family. Talk about the fear and the judgment and all that, but I didn't care, you know what I mean? And I told him where I was and what I've been doing for the last 7 years. And that was great, you know what I mean? It was cleansing. You know, nobody judged me. They looked at me and they saw the sincere attempt at what I was trying to do. I told them what I was up to and where I was going and what I hoped to accomplish by doing this. And once I was done with that, it was good. You know what I mean? So I come back to Florida and I'm working. Now, mind you, I'm at Solutions, I think, for a record. I think it was like 3.5 years I was at the sober house. But I wasn't hanging out, you know what I mean? I was doing things. I didn't have a bank account when I got here. I didn't have a job when I got here. You know, my record was, I had warrants in other states and stuff. So, and Joe knew this. So my next amends is 3 years later. Now the book talks about faith without works is dead, and we're willing to go to any lengths with Victor over alcohol. Well, now mind you, I'm 4 years sober. I got a warrant for my arrest. After that fist up that I did, you know, I talked about it was freedom. Like, I was finally free, that the past couldn't hurt me. And that was true to a certain extent. Like, for the first time, somebody knew me. Somebody knew the real me. But my past was still hurting me because I still had that warrant. And every time I went out or every time I was out in the public somewhere and I saw the lights or a cop came into a restaurant, I was dipping. Like, that's not freedom, right? I'm 4 years sober. I'm sponsoring guys. But here I am with a warrant for my arrest. And, So Joe says, it's time. I'm like, time for what, Joe? He's like, it's time to go back to Georgia. I'm like, no, sir. Where I'm from, you don't turn yourself into the police. Just don't do it. Well, Keith, do you want to stay sober? Yes, Joe. Well, it's time to go back. So I get a lawyer, because by this time I'm working, and I call the lawyer, I tell him what my story is, and he's like, seriously? He's like, yeah. He's like, you're turning yourself in? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right. So now Joe and I go up to Georgia, and I got letters from my AA family, I got letters from my boss, and this is how cool this whole process is. The job I had at the time, my boss was my first sponsor, so he knew what I was about to do, and they held my job for me. Because they didn't know what kind of time I was going to get. I told him where I was going, what I was about to do, and he didn't know if I was going to get a year, but your job will be waiting here for you, Keith. That wouldn't have happened before I got sober. You know what I mean? You got a warrant, you're fired. But he was cool. So we go back up to Georgia. And now, when I get to Georgia, Joe was with me. My mom happened to be visiting, didn't know I was going to be in Georgia, so she was there. And I go to court. Again, I got a plan. Like, I know what I'm going to say. I know what I'm going to do. Joe was there with me. We pray that morning. Always pray before we go in, you know what I mean? Let God know. So I go to court, and if you got a lawyer, you're like called first. So I go into this courtroom, and they call me up first, and the judge calls me up to the thing. And like, "Mr. Neal, where you been the last 7 years?" And I was like, "I've been out doing research and development, Your Honor, you know." And they read off my charges, you know, 3 DUIs, driving without a license. I had like 5 charges or whatever. So he asked the prosecution, "What do you want to give Mr. Neal?" And the prosecution said, "I want to give him a year in jail, $5,000 fine, 3 years probation, all this stuff." And the judge looked at him and says, "No." He says, "Mr. Neal has been rehabilitated. He's rehabilitated himself. He turned himself in. I'm going to give you 2 weeks and a $2,000 fine and 3 years probation." That was it. I was blown away by that. Because in my head, Keith is going to jail for 5 years at least for all these DUIs I had. So I go back to the jail cell. My mom's there. I give her my phone and my wallet and stuff. And I'm in jail with these little jits, right? We're in there playing spades, eating honey buns and peanut butter. And we're chilling, you know, every day we're in there playing spades or whatever. And so that's the one time they start talking about why they're in there. And I just keep to myself because I know I'm not going to ever see these guys again. So I just like, whatever, just listening. So we started talking and they started bragging about why they're in there. The one jit's in there for attempted murder. Another jit's in there for slinging kilos of cocaine. Right? Badge of honor. Hear me roar. They look at me. "Keith, why are you in here?" I said, "DUI from 7 years ago." "What?" I said, "I'm in here for a DUI from 7 years ago." "What, they came and got you? They found you?" "Nah. I turned myself in." "What? You turned yourself in?" I'm like, "Yeah." They go, "Why'd you do that?" And so I started talking about the program, not preaching to them, but telling them, you know. And when I was done talking to them, I said, "You know what? For the first time in 7 years, I'm free." And they looked at me like I was crazy. "What do you mean you're free? We're locked up eating honey buns, eating a cup of noodle soup and shit, watching Cops every Saturday. You're not free." I go, "Yes, I am free." I said, "Now the past can truly never hurt me again." Right? So I come back here. And I move out, you know, I'm doing my thing. And my amends process takes me to my brother. Now, I got a brother who's 12 years younger than me. We got the same father, different mothers. And I, you know, he was instrumental in my dad and me getting together when I was 16. So my dad, I held him hostage for years, right? Because he didn't raise me, he wasn't there for me. I blamed him for not being there for my mom. You know, all this stuff, I blame my father. So when I turned 16, my dad said, "Come live with me." I said, "Oh, yeah." You know what I mean? So I go live with my father, and for years, the man paid, you know, I was blackmailing him, basically. You know, "I need $20 here. I need to buy the car," whatever, just irresponsible. And that's how I got to know my brother and my father. Well, Dad had enough of that and of me partying. So 3 years into the deal, I come home drunk one night, and he had enough. You know, he got tired of the emotional blackmail that I was causing this guy. And he says, "You got 2 choices. You're either going in the Marines, or you're going to school, or you're getting out." Well, I wasn't going to school because that would have been a waste of his money. So I went to the Marines. I figured he's crap, and he don't know anybody from the Marine Corps. 2 hours later, there's a drill sergeant at their door, 5 in the morning. 5 in the morning, right? So I go off to the Marines, and you know, when I go to the Marines, Desert Storm just happens. So I get out of boot camp, I go over to war. And my dad's watching this war on CNN. So now this man is watching this war, and now he's blaming himself that I'm overseas in Desert Storm, right? And he told me this later. So, like, I'm 6 years into my sobriety, and we had this conversation, you know. And Joe talks about intimacy, right? I'm building this relationship with these people, and I'm having intimate relationships. Now, before I got here, intimacy to me meant sex, right? Smashing. No. This is deep-hearted conversation. So me and my pop started talking, and he broke down and started crying, and he told me, like, you know, how bad he felt for sending me off to the Marines. And it blew me away. Like, here's a man that I robbed emotionally for years, and then here he is coming back to me. And this is all due to the program. So we had a conversation, and I told him, I said, man, it wasn't your fault. It was the best thing that ever could have happened to me. I thank you, and I love you for what you've done for me. And our relationship today is the best it's ever been. All due to the program. All due to me being transformed by the steps. Not by me coming in here doing 90 and 90. It wasn't going to happen by me doing 90 and 90. My little brother, he's been having questions for years about where did I go, why I disappear, you know. And I told him. So he was instrumental in me getting my license back. Now, the DUI that I had, I couldn't drive for 15 years. And I didn't. You know, the book talks about the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. The book says that the AA's 12 steps are a set of principles, spiritual in nature, that if practiced as a way of life, can enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. So I got to incorporate these steps, these principles in my life. So if I'm doing this deal, I can't be half in and half out, meaning I can't be cutting corners. I don't have a license, so I shouldn't be driving. I didn't drive. I don't say that to brag. I'm just telling you that if you're going to do this thing, either you're in or you're out. So for 12 years, I didn't drive. So once I go to court and take care of that, they suspend my license for 5 years after that fact. So here I am thinking I'm getting my license back when I go to court and turn myself in. Just because I got sober, give me my license back. No, Keith, you got to pay the penalty. So 5 years goes by, 2012 comes, it's time for me to get my license back. Here now, I got to go back to Georgia, right? And my brother, who turns out he's a cop now in Atlanta, look how God's working for me. I call him up, I tell him what the deal is, you know? Now, mind you, if I was still that same scumbag, he wasn't going to put his neck on the line for me. But he invites me up to his house, and we go through they put me through the ringer. Talk about God was with me because I would have lost on a couple of these ladies, man. They had me running back and forth, like going from West Palm to Miami all in a day. I'm sober, giving my license back. This is what my thinking. Like, I'm entitled to get my license back because I'm 9 years sober. I'm entitled to nothing, people. You know what I mean? I messed up. It's time to pay the price. So whatever I had to do, I had to do it. Allie's getting pissed. She's like, I can't believe they put you through this. I'm like, babe, it's going to be all right. So about 2 months later, I get my license back finally. So for the first time in 12 years, I got my license back. All due to the program. Last Christmas, for the first time, my brother invites me to his house to spend Christmas with his family. Now, all these gifts are coming back to me, all these amends I made, and I got to understand that it's not anything I'm doing, because once I start taking credit for it, it's no good. But I drive back up to Georgia, the state where the crime happened, and it felt awesome driving through Atlanta doing, well, I could tell how fast I was going, but I was legal, and my brother left me the keys to his house, the keys to his truck, and we had a glorious time. My sisters, they live in Atlanta. When I did my geographical cure from Atlanta to Florida, you know, I got in touch with her before I got that last DUI. We were supposed to get together that weekend. I get arrested. I get ROR'd out of there. And I come to Florida, but she don't know this. So supposedly they put out a search party or something for me. So me and her are talking, and I make the amends to her. And it says, you know, like we're closer than ever now. Like, literally, we talk at least once a week. She's a teacher. But I got everybody back in my family. And so we hear the promises read at every meeting, pretty much. And listen to the words. Because I know I've heard newcomers come in, be like 60 days, and they're like, the promises are coming true. No, they're not coming true. You're just not drinking. Life gets better. It's not the promises. It says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, what phase are they talking about? The nine-step phase. It says, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, and we should shut the door on it. And I talked about that last week. Like, I always want to remember my last 72 hours out there. I want to remember where I came from, that person who I was. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. I don't know about you, but when I got here, there was no peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will truly know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? And everybody chimes in, no, we think not. Well, that's true, you know. But at the same time, just because I'm sober, I don't get rendered white as snow. And I talked about it last week. I am a broken man. I have many character defects, many character flaws. That economic insecurity might be the biggest one of all. I told you about that last week. You know, me judging people. I can sit here and be very judgmental. I would come to meetings, and Peter had me shift on this. I would come to meetings, and I would listen to people talk, and I would judge the meetings. Like, if it was an open, disgusting meeting, I would leave, you know. If a person's talking about sponsor people and they don't sponsor the way I sponsor, I would judge. Me and James had a conversation about that. But I'm here to tell you, I'm no better than anybody else out there. I'm a changed man because of the steps. 6 and 7 is a daily grind for me. Like, I have anger issues. I have, you know, I'm just a broken man. But if I think just because I come in here and get sober that that's going to be enough for me to get my family back and get the job back and get the car back, it's not going to happen. You might not get none of those things back. None of them. But we can stay sober without that stuff. You know, I've been around a little bit, and I've seen people come in here, and for whatever reason, think that they're just going to get something for nothing. Doubting that radio frequency WSFN, wanting something for nothing. The book tells me faith without works is dead. All throughout this book. You know, why is it that a man, and that guy I was talking about, the guy who overdosed this past weekend, he had like 25 years sober, I think. Something like that. 20 years sober. So what is it about a man who has that kind of time? What makes him relapse? Right? What makes us go back out there? Because we know what's going to happen. I know what's waiting for me on the other side. Well, the book talks about that too. It says, my friend had emphasized, this is on page 14 of the big book. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Right? I don't just do the steps, I live the steps. I'm supposed to anyway. Particularly, it was imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works is dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank again, he would surely die. Then faith would definitely be dead. So there it is. What am I doing on a daily basis for my recovery? Right? It's like I wake up in the morning. I talked about it last week. I got to have a game plan. Right? I got to have a game plan on how I'm going to navigate through this life. Because life is never, it's not always going to be, you know, peaks. There's going to be valleys. And Allie will tell you, I'm messed up. I'm a wreck. Friday, I was at work, and all my character defects came out. From my first customer at 7 o'clock, I was a raving lunatic. I owe that customer an amends, right? A character assassinated him. My day was ruined. I got to live this thing. It's got to be the most important thing in my life. Because anything I put ahead of it, I'm going to lose. You know, my mom right now is going through something that before I got sober, I would either drank over it to blot it out, or I wouldn't have been around for to get that phone call. But my family has enough, I don't know what the word is, respect or what I'm doing to call me and talk and tell me about these things. The relationship I have today with people in general are true intimate relationships, right? Before I got here, I would have never settled down with anybody, no woman. No woman at all. Because number one, I didn't think I was worthy. Number two, I didn't think she was worthy. You know what I mean? She wasn't worthy of this. But God put a woman in my life that's walking this path with me. Like, is living the principles. That calls me out when I'm acting up. That's what we need in our lives. I talked about it last week. You can tell a lot about a person by the people he hangs out with. Who are you hanging out with? Right? About 2 years ago, my brother sent Joe a letter. And I don't cry or whatever, and Joe cries a lot, but I don't cry. And
he cries for you.
He cries for me. Yeah. And my brother sent Joe this letter, and he was thanking him for Joe giving his brother back. And it blew me away because given how I was living and how I did that dude, man, that wasn't going to happen. Today my life is one of, not to bite Peter, but invitation. Like James says it, and it's true. My mission statement is talk to the newcomer. Like, I love everybody in this room, but the newcomer to me is the most important person in the room, literally. Because they don't know, right? They have no idea. If I can get sober, anybody can get sober. You know, I don't have the most money. I don't have the nicest car. I don't have the nicest house. All my needs are met, though. And I have a God of my understanding that has indeed come into my life and lives miraculously. Just this past week, my brother sent me an email. They found the steps that Rachel's been putting on rocketed.org. And, you know, my dad called me and, like, literally almost brought tears to my eyes because he was blown away by what this program has done. And he heard me, but it wasn't me. You know what I mean? He heard somebody totally different. So when I say to you that old person has to die, that's what happened. If you're new, and I'm going to hammer this home for the next couple weeks, if you're new, ask yourself, what do you want? Right? Do you want this to be your last treatment center? Do you want this to be your last halfway house? Do you want this to be your last white chip? A lot of you out there just like, this guy's talking crazy. Like, what's he babbling about? I was talking to a sponsor the other day. Might have been today, actually. Guy was in the treatment center. Did 6 months there. Parents paid 30 G's. He just got out, probably Friday. By Sunday, he was smoking crack. He thought it would be a good idea to leave the treatment center and go play pool at a bar. Now he's smoking crack. This is a serious, serious thing we're dealing with. And you know, I'm out of prayer to be liked. I don't care if you like me or not. I don't care about any of that. I'm sober today. The people I associate with are sober today. Nobody in my inner circle is not doing a deal. No one. They don't get in the inner circle. You know, I surround people who expect more of me than I expect of myself. That's what you should be doing right now. right? Take advantage of the $30,000 you're spending right now in this treatment center. Take advantage of that. It's not your money, right? So you don't care. Your insurance is paying that off. But this disease wants us dead. And just because I'm sober, it's not, the road gets more narrow now that I'm sober. It gets more and more narrow. Because when I get to step 10, you know, I've only done one four-step inventory. That's not to say, you know, I know people that do the steps every year. I haven't felt the need to do the steps again. Because when I get to step 10, we'll talk about that next week, I take the garbage out right then and there. But this program, this way of life, is action, right? It's all action. There's no coming here and hanging out. There is, but nothing's going to happen for you. So my life today, man, is one of, I'm amazed. Like, if I was to die today, I'd be a satisfied customer. I got my family back in my life. I got the love of my life. There's nothing else I could ask for. So I'm not going to sit up here and babble anymore. You know, 8-9 is just amends. It doesn't mean say I'm sorry. It means to repair, to make new. And it can happen with this program. Thank you.